Off the Ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome back. So to the main story of the day, really. Chris Froome is fighting to save his reputation, if not his career as well, this evening after returning a failed drugs test at the Vuelta this September. The asthma drug salbutamol is the offending substance. WADA rules 1,000 nanograms per millimetre to be allowed in a competitor's system. Froome had doubled that in his urine sample at the Vuelta. This wasn't made public until today because Team Sky lawyers have been fighting the charge. There is no provisional ban of any kind for Froome. Salbutamol doesn't trigger a provisional ban like certain substances do. In terms of potential bans, there are all kinds of comparisons from nothing to, in 2007, the Italian cyclist Alessandro Petacchi was given a 12-month ban for excessive salbutamol and stripped as well of five victory stages in the Giro. So this was revealed today, not by the UCI or anybody in the cycling fraternity, but by The Guardian and Le Monde. There was a joint investigation. So in a moment, we'll hear from Dr. Ross Tucker, exercise physiologist based in Cape Town. But Martha Kellner is chief sports reporter with The Guardian. And Martha and her colleague Sean Ingle broke that story today in The Guardian. So Martha joined the lads on OTB AM this morning. And here's a summation of what she was saying.
The genesis of the story is basically a number of sources came to both The Guardian and Le Monde, advising us that during the Vuelta a España in September, that Chris Froome had had a urine test that had returned an adverse analytical finding, which is the equivalent of a failed drugs test. It's not an anti-doping rule violation per se, because they do get the chance to appeal, but the length of bans have varied with the finding that Froome has had against him, which is that he's had double the permitted level of salbutamol, which is a drug he takes to treat his asthma. So it could vary from anything between a slap on the wrist to a 6-month, even a year-long ban or longer. It's just going to be a watching brief, really, to see how the UCI choose to deal with it and whether Chris Froome is able to explain why he did have double the amount of permitted levels of salbutamol in his system at that point. It's interesting, Chris Froome says he was acting on the guidance of a Team Sky doctor. There was, I've forgotten the exact name of the doctor who was out there at the Vuelta with them, but he says that the doctor advised him to take increased levels of this medication and that he did so under supervision. He doesn't feel like he's knowingly broken the rules, or he doesn't feel like he's broken rules at all. But ignorance is no defence in these anti-doping cases, and the UCI will be under pressure to not be showing any special favours to Chris Froome, regardless of his status in the sport.
Yeah, notwithstanding that, it does seem that this has come to light only because of the excellent work of you guys and your colleagues at Le Monde, as opposed to it actually being made public so far by the UCI or the Vuelta organisers or the agency who's doing the tests.
Yeah, so there's no legal onus on either the UCI or Team Sky to make it public, but it is interesting that the only reason they have made it public is because ourselves and our colleagues at Le Monde have forced their hand. The UCI sometimes choose to make anti-doping rule violations, or they have to make anti-doping rule violations public, but with an adverse analytical finding, they can wait basically until there's a resolution to the case. But as we know, Chris Froome's working with a team of scientists and lawyers with Team Sky to try and find a resolution to the problem, to try and explain the reasons behind why he did have so much salbutamol in his system. There can be a number of different explanations for it. Some people have a higher secretion rate in their urine, possibly because they're dehydrated. Can be a number of other reasons, and there's a thing that they can do called a pharmacokinetics test, which basically often involves spending prolonged periods of time in a laboratory, up to 16 hours, where your urine is tested every 2 hours under a number of conditions to see how the medication is reflected in the samples, basically.
Martha Kellner there speaking on OTBAM. Ross Tucker, as I said, is standing by. Evening, Ross.
Good evening.
So, kind of confused is the overriding state at the moment. Like, I think, like probably a lot of people, I saw the headline Chris Froome positive drugs test, clicked in, saw salbutamol, thought that's a bit strange, saw double the limit, thought that was beyond clumsy and therefore more strange. It was also during the Vuelta, not some out of competition test for something more exotic or powerful. And I haven't really heard much since, which makes sense of this to me.
Yeah, I mean, what you raise there is one of many strange, bizarre aspects to this case. It's, you know, you'd like to think that a positive doping case is always going to lead you down the road of concluding that you've just caught a doper. But as we've seen and discussed many times, that's unfortunately very rarely the case. So at the risk of giving listeners what sounds like a physiology lesson, there's input and output in the sense that you take the salbutamol in the form of an inhaler, an asthma pump, is what most people would know it as, and there's a limit to how much WADA allows athletes to take. Problem is, WADA can't test how much you take. I mean, how would they know what dosage you've inhaled over the course of a day or a week? And so the solution to that is that they set a limit on how much they can detect, and that's the output. So what you have now is an input on one side and an output on the other side. And theoretically, if your urine contains more than that maximum allowable limit, then you have abused this drug and are facing potential sanctions. So what has happened in the case of Froome? All we know for now is that his urine on one day only, so this he would have been tested multiple times in that Vuelta because he was winning stages and the race, he, for whatever reason, has tripped that limit up, not by a small amount, but by double what the output is. We now get to speculate about what the cause of that is. Was it an increase in the dosage beyond what WADA allows him to take? Was it some change in his physiology or circumstances that caused the amount in the urine to change without him having done anything illegal? And that's where the confusion lies, is that you don't know what the behavior was based solely on what the urine looks like.
Yes. So Dave Brailsford has definitely jumped on that defense straight away. He says there are complex medical and physiological issues which affect the metabolism and excretion of salbutamol. We're committed to establishing the facts and understanding exactly what happened on this occasion. So he's going in that direction. I mean, it doesn't help that over the last certainly 6 months in the Matt Lawton story that Dave Brailsford and Sky have been exposed as routine liars. So that muddies the water even further here.
Right. So a couple of things. Number one, Sky's strategy is so predictable, you could write it yourself at home and then the lawyers will just legalize it and put it into fancy language. It's so clear what they're going to do. They are going to argue that Chris Froome normally takes a relatively mild dose in terms of input. Remember I spoke about those two sides?
Yeah.
That he is a person who has a relatively high output. And that because of the asthma, which was in his defense, he's already said this, he was experiencing more severe symptoms. The doctors decided that they needed to increase the dose. So they did that. They get up to, but not beyond. They'll never admit to going beyond the legal maximum limit. And the consequence of that is that because he's a naturally high excretor of salbutamol, he's tripped the limit up. And then in addition, they will probably claim something related to dehydration because there was a study in 2014 on 32 athletes, not elite, but just athletes, which found that if you take a large dose of an inhaler, salbutamol via inhalation, 60% of athletes will trip up that threshold in the urine if they're tested soon after. Now, they will capitalize on that and they will use that. And I fully expect them to go with the combination of salbutamol is highly variable from one day to the next.
Yeah. Can I jump in there at that point? I see where you're going. Absolutely. So then the immediate question jumps to mind, well, why doesn't this happen pretty much every day to somebody?
That's exactly the million-dollar question, because we know how many athletes are taking these inhalers. We know that asthmatics are overrepresented in professional sport, which is in itself bizarre. And so you know that athletes are frequently dehydrated, exerting themselves maximally while they're on inhalers and not tripping it up. And that's why, in my opinion, the argument around this, basically what it boils down to is that threshold limit of 1,000 nanograms per milliliter in the urine is too low. That's what they're going to say.
Yeah.
But my position is that it's a lot more robust than they would want you to believe. And whatever court case happens, whether it's the UCI appeal, whether this thing makes it all the way to CAS, the crux of the matter is going to be whether they can show reasonably that it's possible for a guy to trip it up. And the other thing that's, in my opinion, absolutely crucial is that Froome is not some new guy using an asthma inhaler for the first time.
Yes.
This is an athlete who for years has been tested, has been winning races while using the same product. Mm. And so there would be a longitudinal record of Froome's own values.
Yeah.
In a sense, it's almost like the biological passport works for the sport, but Froome has got his own biological passport for salbutamol. So there's a lot there that gives us the ability to not know, because I don't think we'll ever know specifically, but we don't have to guess the way that I think Sky want this to sound. You know, Sky want this to sound like it's random guesswork, completely volatile, completely unpredictable. It's not.
Okay.
And so that's going to be the crux of it.
Okay, so then there's a few possibilities. And look, we're always dancing around some kind of legal line here when we have these discussions live on the radio, which makes them fun. So one, then, there is the possibility that he has completely abused his Ventolin or whatever he's taken, his salbutamol. He's completely abused it and doubled the limit. And you know, him saying, I took the greatest care to ensure I did not use more than the permissible dose, in light of what you've said, looks very questionable. So that's one option. This question, I suppose, can't be unconnected. Is salbutamol, is it ever a masking agent for more serious, more potent drugs? Or can salbutamol increase the effectiveness of other more potent, powerful drugs?
Yeah, good question. So there is a line of thought that that's the case. But when you look at the anti-doping code, it doesn't list salbutamol by itself as a masking agent. And so I'll be honest with you is that I don't know the answer. I've been looking into that for the last few hours, but I haven't been able to verify that that is the case. What I can tell you is that if an athlete gets caught with salbutamol plus a masking agent, it's automatically a positive test. And that's because salbutamol is one of the few drugs that's called a threshold drug, in the sense that you're only positive, quote unquote, if your urine levels exceed a certain amount. And so it would be one of the drugs that you could hide most effectively using a diuretic or a masking agent. So in combination, it's a positive test, but by itself, I could not honestly tell you whether it's a masking agent, but I have seen it claimed to be that.
And what about potentially, is there any way it could increase the effectiveness of other drugs?
Possibly, but again, I don't know. And again, you know, this comes back to an issue that we always have with doping, is that even the effectiveness of salbutamol by itself is not clear cut.
Yeah.
In terms of the research. I mean, there are studies showing that inhaled salbutamol doesn't have an effect in non-asthmatics. And there are studies that ingested salbutamol does have an effect in non-asthmatics. And so it depends on how it's administered and potentially the dosage, and those may be related. And so the picture is quite complex. But in my opinion, that's not really relevant, because regardless of whether it gives you an effect or not, it still shouldn't be used at the levels that it seems to have been used in this particular case.
Okay. So, right. I'm still confused. I still don't understand how such a clumsy thing could have happened. I mean, if we take your analysis that you don't just stumble into double the permissible dose in your urine sample, that, you know, you haven't taken the greatest care, most likely, to ensure you didn't end up in that situation, then I just don't understand what the hell was going on between the 17th and 18th stages at the Vuelta. Like, I'm at a loss. I don't get this story.
Yeah, if you'd asked me to, first of all, I'm surprised that Froome has even ever been caught or failed at the test for anything, not necessarily because he's clean, but just because elite top level athletes hardly ever get done for doping.
Yeah, it's kind of a quaint thing to be caught in, especially in competition, but no one fails doping tests, whether you're either clean or
exactly.
you're doping with some kind of intelligence, but you don't get caught.
Right. You always thought, I mean, 20 years ago, you thought you might catch a guy, but these days, the feeling around doping is that it's going to come out as part of a massive conspiracy based on testimonies in front of grand juries and tip-offs to the FBI, or in the case of the Russian scandal, to a journalist and so forth, and whistleblowers and death threats and so forth.
Yeah.
And here we are talking about one of, if not the most high-profile endurance athletes in the world, getting done for a drug that never in a million years I would have thought would be possible in competition. So it is a crazy situation, and it wouldn't surprise me, because of what we've been discussing, to see them not wiggle out of it, but to create so much chaos and confusion around the assessment. I mean, we're confused talking about it. You can imagine when they get the scientists involved, and they're going to have, as Martha said, pharmacokinetics and tests and arguments and so forth. This is going to be muddier than the Jiffy bag was.
Well, I mean, in light of the Jiffy bag situation, I mean, some of the highlights being the numerous lies Dave Brailsford told Matt Lawton. Emma Pooley was in Spain, not France, according to her website, despite what they had told Matt Lawton. And then, I mean, I was just reading again the Shane Stokes interview with Matt Lawton. I don't know, have you read that, Ross? But one of the real great moments of that is where Matt Lawton has called back Dave Brailsford to say, Emma Pooley is not where you said she was. And then Brailsford says, oh, I'll check it out. And then Brailsford comes back to Matt Lawton and lies with such enthusiasm here. He says, he said to Matt Lawton, right, I've nailed it, said Brailsford. I've spoken to the driver of the bus. The driver actually remembers being really pissed off that it was Brad's biggest win on the road in his career, but he never got a chance to congratulate him. He remembers how vividly he was upset that he never got the chance, that he had to drive away with the rest of the riders and take them to the airport while Brad was still doing his podium and dope testing and media stuff after winning the race. And Lawton was thinking to himself, oh no, my story's got a hole in it now. And just absentmindedly looked up that day on YouTube and saw Bradley Wiggins right there beside the bus doing an interview, and has Brailsford on the phone to him, literally lying. And it culminates in Brailsford saying, OK, is there anything we can do to make this go away, effectively? So, like, that's what we're dealing with. So in that context, I wonder how damaging all of this is to Chris Froome, firstly, and then, I mean, can Team Sky be damaged anymore?
So first of all, I did read that article. It was terrific, and the work by Lawton was terrific. And one of the things is, I mean, speaking to a journalist now, is that I'm sure it's frustrating sometimes for you guys to continue to bash up against legal boundaries and issues and so on. But you see where the fruits of that start to come through when you now get this accumulation of lies and evidence, because Sky have spent every cent of any credibility currency that they've ever had. And they've done that over years. I mean, it wasn't just the Jiffy bag. It was the, we're going to be transparent and open and non-doping. And then they proceeded to hire people who everyone except them knew was doping. There was the Wiggins, the Jiffy bag thing, obviously. So they've basically depleted their credibility reserves. And that's testament to the work that the media's done. So can they be damaged anymore? No, I don't think so. And looking at the reaction that I've seen so far, people who believed Sky before this will double down on it and say, hey, it's just an innocent mistake. Whereas people who had already decided that there was enough suspicion, they are just confirming it. So this is a murky enough situation that it's probably not going to nudge the needle on where Sky are. Froome is a little bit different, because he came out of the Wiggins Jiffy Gate scandal relatively clean, and now has been dragged into this particular one. So I guess eventually the doping spotlight falls on everyone, and whether he can slip out of this particular one, I don't know. Certainly reputationally, no. But and the Vuelta title, I suspect, will be very difficult to keep. But I don't see him getting a 6-month or a year ban. My feeling at this stage is, based on precedent, it was a cross-country skier, got 2 months. I would anticipate 2 to 3.
Okay. And at this point, we're still left with more questions than answers about just what went on and why. In short, like, this still doesn't quite make sense to you. That's our conclusion this evening.
Yeah, the type of drug doesn't make sense. The circumstances, the timing don't make sense to me. I would never, as I said, never in a million years have predicted that this would be the one that he would get caught using. It is quite bizarre. So I think that it is only going to add mud to already muddied waters.
Mm. If somehow in the next while you stumble on some firm evidence that salbutamol is a useful masking agent or somehow increases the effectiveness of other drugs, be sure and shout, because that would be interesting. Because it's confusing to say the least at this point. So I guess we await to see more evidence or more of what Chris Froome says around the details of it, and we go from there, Ross.
Yeah, I think at this stage, at some point, presumably in the new year, we'll discover what their strategy is. Although, as I said, I don't think we're going to be surprised by it. Mm. And then it's a matter of how do the UCI approach it. And there's, Martha alluded to this in your early interview, there's really interesting pressure on them to not ease off just because of who it, or specifically because it's Chris Froome. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, 2017 gave us the Jiffy bag scandal. This one might be even more protracted and less helpful for the reputation of the sport, I reckon.
Okay. Dr. Ross Tucker, thanks as ever.
Thank you. Always good.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with AIR. With live AIB club football and hurling action this month on AIR Sport.
Get all sparkly with the lights. Get all bossy with your list. Get all crafty with the wrapping. And all jiggy as they play the hits. Get all poshy with your starters. Get all party with your dress. Get all huggy with the family. Get all festive-y, cos it's Christmas. Every sort of festive-y for every sort. Happy Avoca for all your gifts and treats, bits and bobs. Shopping, lunching, listing, stores, cafes, online. Avoca. Get all festive-y.